Looking at
not
the
all of them are appropriate for
right. This yeah, I'm still figuring out how family friendly I want to make this thing.
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. I have a great show for you today, so let's kick things off with episode 005, part 2 of the Mike Anticelli podcast. Today's returning guest, Mike Anticelli. This is part 2 of my discussion with him. We'll dive deeper into the freelance marketplace, expanding your skills as a developer, applying for jobs properly, and how he's traveled to South America while working as a remote freelance developer. Okay, let's kick things off with Mike.
Kind of, what about your current role? You're doing all kinds of freelance work, and you're kind of a hired gun, right, as an animator, different projects. I saw you worked at Trinket and Rat Tag and other studios that were founded by ex-Wideload people, actually.
Yeah, a bunch of ex-Wideload people went and became successful in their own business endeavors as well. And yeah, I just actually finished up something with Trinket, their game, Battle Chef Brigade.
Yeah. I was crushed when they left Wideload. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, me too.
It was, in hindsight, it was a smart thing to do. And now they have their successful game. So yeah, I'll have to get those guys out here.
Yeah, their Battle Chef Brigade is published by Adult Swim Games. Mm-hmm. And I just helped them out with some new content that they're adding. The game came out last year, some downloadable content. And actually, my role there is very different from animation. Well, not very different, but it's pretty different. I do the coloring for their all the frames for the animation because it's 2D.
Right, 2D,
and
yeah.
They've got Eric there as art director. So
super talented, yeah.
It sounds like a very basic thing. Oh, you're just coloring in picture, you know, color by numbers, whatever. You'd be surprised how hard of a time they had just finding someone who could even color in the lines. Wow. They're going through different freelancers or people they hired, and they're like, they just keep coming back to me. I actually just started with them just to help them out, just for you know, not to actually be hired or anything when they were first doing the game. And they're like, we really need someone to color. And I'm like, I'll help you guys. Why not? I mean, my friends and all that. So that's another thing, being open to whatever would happen. I just help them just to, and mostly Eric, their art director, Eric is an amazing artist. And just to be kind of involved in any art that he does was an honor for me. So I said, yeah, I'll help you guys. I'll color some of the frames for the animation. That's fine. Then they kept coming back to me like, Mike, we need your help for the love of God. There's a deadline coming.
We got an update. We need your help.
Yeah. And they're like, we try, you know, like one time I wasn't able to work with them and they tried to get somebody else and it just was all botched up. And they're like, we need you to do it. You're reliable. You're quick.
What are you in Photoshop or what are you?
In Photoshop. It's the way that Eric does it. It doesn't lend itself to using like a Toon Boom animation studio or any of those animation programs, so it has to be done by hand. I just go in, put on my headphones, put on a podcast, maybe
there you go,
and it's just very therapeutic. Go in there, get it done, I enjoy it, and I enjoy helping them out because I'm really proud of what they're doing and the project that they're that they made.
It's on a bunch of platforms. Is it on Switch
on
yet?
Switch. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Switch. It's on
my
Switch.
Copy here.
Ah, awesome.
Switch. And
Xbox One.
I think it's going for PlayStation. I'm not sure if it's on there yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely beautiful looking game.
Right.
The music I always think is really next level. The story is unbelievable. So check it out. It's called Battleship Brigade. Anybody who's listening by Trinket Studios.
Yeah, who may I'll put be it on in the show notes.
Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, they will be on the podcast here at some point. I'll get a hold of those
at
guys.
At some point, they'll be on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just finished that up recently. So cool. That's kind of the thing being a freelance, is it's either feast or famine, basically.
Yeah, like right.
Two or three projects at the same time or nothing at all.
Right. So, yeah, you got to say yes to all of them because you never know when that drought's going to come. So you want to have some reserves and have some more skills under your belt. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
So what about learning? Kind of like what do you do to learn and improve, you know, as an animator, as an artist, as a game creator?
Well, recently, I've been trying to kind of expand my skills in some different areas. So I finally made the decision to start learning some programming. So I'm starting to learn Python right now.
Okay.
Just to see if I like it. You know, I haven't done too much in the programming realm. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the very early stages, so I haven't even done anything cool yet. So I think that, it's kind of dry right now, but once I can build something that kind of does something mm-hmm. really awesome, I'll get that a kind of addictive nature to being to enjoy. So it's something that I've always kind of had in the back of my mind that I wanted to do is learn.
No, that's smart. Just kind of expanding your skills and always be learning, right? I think.
Yeah. I started doing around the same time, I basically had some moment where I said, you know what, all the things I've been putting off learning, I'm going to do it all right now. I don't care if it's just 5 minutes per day mm-hmm. or whatever. So I started the programming. I'm starting to learn copywriting actually too.
Cool.
And for anyone that doesn't know what that is, it's basically selling, but by the written word.
With words, right.
Yeah. With words. Anything you've ever seen for a business that's been written down mm-hmm. is copywriting.
Right.
And so as a freelancer, I'm my own business and everything I write, everything I put out into the world.
Scan your, when I read your bio, I'm like, I literally thought to myself, Mike, that's pretty well written. Right. And I didn't even know you were doing the copywriting class, but it makes sense now.
If you are writing and you write something that, is maybe offensive, I'm just thinking if you're not so great at writing and you end up saying some things that don't look so well, you won't even get to mm-hmm. the first part. You won't even get the person to go want to look at your reel because they just read your short LinkedIn biography. Be more appealing in your writing. I think that's wonderful. And for anybody, even if you're not in the industry, to at least know how advertising is being shown to you, it will help you become a better consumer.
And I think writing and especially copywriting and writing is important too, because I see in my current role lots of resumes and very few of them have a cover letter, even though they're requested. And very few of those, even beyond that, have a cover letter that isn't a generic standard template, I'll send this to everyone cover letter, right? And it just it blows my mind sometimes how little people pay attention to that, especially if they don't have a huge reel and they don't have a bunch of experience and a bunch of games on their resume, that they wouldn't take that time if they were truly interested in the opportunity to spend a little time talking about their skills and how they see them matching with the company and what the company is doing and things like that. If you see two resumes that are pretty much the same, but someone else puts some time in and makes a way to relate to their skills with your business, you're going to pay more attention to that one versus just another resume from a 2018 grad. Nothing special, no cover letter.
That makes me wonder, you know, I'm curious about what do you look for in a cover letter?
Yeah. Like
on you a little bit now,
right.
Interview you about what you guys look for. Let's talk about cover letter. What would be,
I think to have one, just to actually have one, right. Okay. Because I 70, 80, 90, maybe it depends on the role, percent of them don't have one. So just
that puts you in the top 20 or
it shows you read the directions, you know, include
that too.
Include a resume and a cover letter why you're fit for this job. So yeah, do the thing, put a little bit of effort in, write a cover letter, and then you can have a baseline one where that you can kind of semi-templatize it and then maybe customize it from that point, but just don't send like a generic cookie cutter one, because that doesn't really show that much more effort than nothing at all. So have one that is customized to some degree, kind of speaking to what you do as a developer and how it relates to the business, and act like you know something about the business. I mean, I even have interviews where people haven't gone on the website. They haven't looked at our apps. And it's like, how do you not do that in this day and age when you have everyone's got a computer in their pocket, and you take 15 or 20 minutes and just do the minimum due diligence just to show that you're prepared. Just get on my soapbox there, but yeah.
No, I think anybody who's listening would. The cover letters, I can see how they can be intimidating to somebody saying, oh my God, how do I talk about myself mm-hmm. without regurgitating what's in my resume that they could read there? How do I get into, what are they even looking for? And if I'm understanding correctly, it's you're showing a little bit about what you can do and what you know mm-hmm. and how it relates to the position that you're looking to get, or it relates to how it can benefit the company, or
exactly. Kind of like, I can do X, Y, and Z, and I see with this game you do Z, so my skills can relate and help you do Z better because I've experienced doing it at 1, 2, 3 at whatever, and just kind of tying it back to how you can benefit the company. Too often it's like, I want to be this and I want to do this and I, it's too much. It's about the person and not about what the person is going to do to benefit the company. And I think people get a little too self-absorbed, a little too narcissistic about like what they want to do, what their vision is and their dream. And it's fine to have all those things. It's great. Do it. Have the dreams, but show the benefit. Say how what you do can help the company that you want to work for. And then that makes it more tangible. And it's not just about me, I. Literally thousands of resumes that I've scanned. You only have so much time. What are you going to do to help this company, and how can you contribute? That's the stuff you should focus on. And Google, they can watch YouTube videos. There's online courses that are free. There's all kinds of things you can do to learn how to write effective cover letters, and then just apply that strategy and try to be selective enough that you're not applying to a million places where you just blanket shotgun method with your resume, but you actually craft, a semi-custom cover letter for the ones you're really interested in to show that you have that initiative and you can follow directions and you've thought through how you can benefit the company.
Would you say that part of the sending, having the requirement for the cover letter and the person following not only that requirement, but any other requirements that you may have, is it important that they 100% follow every requirement that you put on there? Or is it really just like some things are there to weed out people who...
It's not a deal breaker, because like if somebody doesn't have a cover letter, but they have, a killer reel and they have great games on a resume or something. If you're starting out, you're not, you can't do that. So, you don't have that street cred. You haven't earned ability to just be like, I've got too much under my belt to screw around with the cover letter, even though I still think it's a good idea. It's a numbers game, and some of the roles, you've got dozens and dozens. So it's like, you have to make that impression, and you don't make typos, right? It just shows you're sloppy, right? It shows you don't pay attention to detail, and that can then turn into, oh, I didn't save the file right, and my hard drive blew up, and we can't ship the game, right? Granted, I'm extrapolating into a doomsday scenario.
I wouldn't be surprised if one led to the other.
Yeah, it just kind of sets a bad tone when you have a resume that's got typos, and then no cover letter or generic cover letter with typos, or addressed to the wrong company. You see a few of those, you're like,
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like, I think you forgot to change your generic cover letter to the company that you're applying to. It's probably not a good thing to do.
No, it's not a good thing.
Okay, quick question break. What are your thoughts so far? Do you have a topic idea, a question to ask, or a guest suggestion? Let me know at 224-484-7733 or on the gamedevadvice.com website.
All right, funny or odd story. I mean, you kind of touched on it working at a dozens of them, but working at
not
the
all of them are appropriate for
right. Yeah, I'm still figuring out how family friendly I want to make this thing.
You know about my nickname, right? When I worked at Wide Load,
Fribbles.
Fribbles.
Fribbles. Yeah, was it Ryan gave you that? How did you? Yeah, it was like
how did I become known at work?
I don't know.
Fribbles. I'll tell you the story of that because it just happened to be. Coincidence of circumstances that led to that. So first of all, as anybody who is named Mike will probably know by now that in school, in work, wherever you go, there's at least two other Mikes. There's going to be two, maybe three.
Right.
And this was also the case. JJ, remember JJ?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, JJ Williams. Awesome.
Was trying to figure out a nickname for me that wasn't Mike, and he could not come up with anything. He was trying every day at lunch. He's like, and then he came up with something that was just terrible. Around that same time, we were doing the entire office was playing some shooting game, some third-person shooter. I forgot the name of it.
Research.
Research, obviously, yes. We were doing a lot of research.
Doing a lot of research.
During office hours. So I decided to make a sniper, and a sniper called Fribbles. Because I thought that was a funny name for a sniper killing people by headshots. I was starting
not so innocent when you're dropping a bullet between their eyes.
Yeah. But it's great when it says you were killed by Fribbles, you know, after the person dies. So that's exactly what was happening. I was sniping. People would be playing, and then all of a sudden they say, Fribbles killed you. You were killed by Fribbles. And then we go, right. God damn it, Fribbles. You would just hear across the office, right. Like, you Fribbles. And they like look over me.
I could hear JJ. And,
Fribbles, damn it.
Fribbles. Yes, it was exactly like that. So it didn't take long before me in the game as Fribbles was just me. As Fribbles and
right. You worked into one and
yep. This didn't have to. There's one less Mike
right.
in the office that had to be distinguished from the other Mikes, and it was just Fribbles and then eventually it became Fribs. So
Fribbles is too long. You can just
I mean, and then it was it became spoken without any irony, without any jokes. It was just like, where's Fribs? Fribs? Fribbles?
Fribbles. Hey, that animation.
It was like, and I think even at one point. You said it once or twice. You called me Fribs or Fribbles. Yeah, I think you were resisting it for a while. You know, you're like, he's Mike. You know, let's just, you know, remain professional. This or that.
Right.
I remember at some points you even slipped up and called me Fribbles. And I remember distinctly those days.
Right.
I was like, oh God, it's going to be like on my paperwork, my contract. Going to say, you know, contract Fribbles.
Yeah, like I have to change my name. I'm going to do things like Prince. I'm going to have to copyright it.
Yep.
Legally change my name.
So yeah, that's the story of how I got the name Fribbles. I haven't heard that in a long time. Not you know, being away from all the Wide Load people. So I guess.
Yeah, and just for people that don't know, Wide Load, you can Google it. Wide Load Games was started by Alex Seropian. He started the studio, I think it was after Bungie, or maybe there was a gap in there. I'm not sure.
After
but,
Bungie.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm not sure if there was a gap after that.
Yeah, because I think there was some time he was on the Seattle area and a little studio called Bungie, you know, Halo. And he had started the studio and had a different kind of production model with using more contractors and making it easier to ramp up and down and to be more smart about running the business, not like Telltale. Not doing stupid crap like that. Yeah, he started the studio. They did, was it Stubbs the Zombie?
Which I did some of the motion, when I was at Red Eye, some of the motion capture cleanup
Stubbs
the Zombie. I auditioned for playing a zombie, but I didn't make it, luckily. So I didn't have to put on a motion capture suit, thank God.
You move too human. You can't be a zombie. Is there anything I should have asked you but didn't? Like, what's the state of freelance in 2018 in the game industry? Just from your perspective, right? From what you see,
I would say if you're working remotely, I think it could be pretty competitive because you're basically working against talent all over the world, hiring from Eastern Europe, and they told me they're like, oh, can you go lower? And like, oh, how much do you want to pay? And he's like, well, I'm paying these guys Eastern Europe, and it was like. Like I can make more at McDonald's. To be more successful, it's to use your advantages, you know, where you live, proactive about it too, in terms of finding work. As a freelancer, you're always on the lookout for the next job. So you got to keep those things up to date. You got to be proactive and looking for those too, and doing a lot of different things like the copywriting thing I was mentioning, and learning how to sell yourself. And those are all good talents to have, in my opinion. I mean, if you do eventually want to switch to a salary at some point and you need to write that cover letter and you know how to sell yourself well because you were freelancing, or you know how the business runs a little bit better than somebody who just goes to work every day. They work in their little department. They don't care about anything else. But as a freelancer or owning your own small business, you've had budgets, you've had timelines, you've created contracts, you've outsourced, and you've managed out, you know, people to help you with other parts that you haven't done.
Well, so plus your network too, I would think, right? Like after you've earned people's trust and done great work, you have kind of like people you reach back out to that know and trust you. And then you can see if they've got a need popping up, and they may be like, oh, not now, but I'll keep you in mind. And then you get a text, you know, 2 months or an email later, and it's like, Hey, you still available? We got this thing. We need some help. And you know, that kind of stuff.
Definitely. I have a lot of my work, I would say like 50% of all my work has been a client that I had previously. Mm-hmm. So after they hire you once, and then maybe it might be a long time, it might not be that long, they come back to you again because they're like, okay, we know Mike's good. He was the animator. Everything worked out. Now we need an animator. Mike's first on the list. And then really it just comes down to availability at that point. Is like, and like I said, the feast or famine thing is real. It's a real issue. Yeah, it's interesting. There's a different world for that, but in some ways it's the same, some ways it's not the same. So
what about the, just kind of quick, but like the travel, like I remember you being in Brazil, and I'm looking here, you spent 3 months in Brazil, Argentina, and Chile. Were you working at those times and just working remotely and just, you know, FTPing files over, or were you kicking back, or a combination?
Yeah, combination. You know? If I was, I'm always 100% with my equipment and ready to go. And I have worked while I was out there, you know, just have the internet connection. I bring whatever equipment that I usually use day to day, hard drives and all that. It's a little bit of extra stuff in my bag, but it's totally worth it.
You know, the world is flat now, and be able to freelance remotely and working with people and being able to travel and still work on things and not be kind of bound to an office and a nine to five and all that kind of stuff. That's I know that a lot of people are excited about that. I'm sure too, you couldn't do that, you know, as an intern, and you're like, I'm just going to go do this now. But I mean, you had to build up your portfolio and your network and your reputation and your shipped games. But the fact that you can do that now, you've kind of paid your dues, and now you have that option. I think that's awesome.
Freelance, you can end up doing something like that because sometimes you work remotely, or sometimes you're in between projects if you can't work remotely. But I would say even a person who is in a salary position who's in a remote job, if they can somehow swing being remote, can do something like that. They just have to be proactive in showing that they can be reliable and trustworthy outside the office. I'm sure as a producer, you've probably been hesitant to say, oh, you want to work from home, but how am I going to know that you're working the whole time, huh? So you have to be able to prove that, you know, you're available, you can do just as good of a job.
Production evolves, and there's better tools for tracking, and tasks are sent out, and you can see when they're getting done. There's less suspicion, you know, that somebody's sitting around watching The Price is Right eating Captain Crunch, but that you're actually doing the work. And when the files come in and it's getting checked, and it's like, yeah, you know, this arrangement is working. So there's always a little bit of that trepidation where you don't see the person, but when you see the work getting done, that's all that really counts. So like if they're, you know, you're getting the work done, doesn't matter if you're down the street or halfway around the world, you know, that's the name of the game, getting the shit done.
But let me ask you this. I had a question, and I guess this is something I should have asked, but you didn't. So you've hired freelancers before as well, right? So
for sure. Course.
So between hiring someone as a salary position versus, which we talked about already, what do you look for when hiring a freelancer?
It depends how much risk's involved. So if it's somebody doing something that is critical to the game, there's more risk involved. So you may vet a little bit more. I think reputation is one thing that is important, because people you know, again, they earn their reputation. So you have higher confidence if it's somebody that you've worked with before. Obviously, the portfolio, what their work looks like. I remember we used Six More Vodka out of Germany. Mm-hmm. Remember them?
Very talented.
Very talented, like crazy talented concept art. So like we used them on Marvel Avengers Initiative and stuff. And yeah, it was like just looking at their work online, like, wow, these guys get it. So it was just a matter of working out the numbers then. But yeah, the portfolio I think plays a big deal. And then also the you know, the reputation and you know, how accessible they are. Mm-hmm. You never like to send stuff and all you hear is crickets for a long time. So if people are following up with emails and sending files back and asking questions, those are always good signs.
Is price point
price too,
one consideration?
It all kind of depends, right? If it's more of a more high end, you pay that premium because we knew Six More Vodka would do killer concept work that would get through the Disney folks when we sent it.
Well, but I guess how important it is basically is what it comes down to, how important it is to the success of the project.
Right. And if it's like it's high profile, it's critical work, then price is less important. If it's just, we got this pile of stuff that we need somebody to do the thing, then you just pay based more competitively and what a cheaper price is. So I guess it pays more to be, you know, refined, at the top of your game, kind of be the go-to. Like if you want that, you have to pay the premium, but you know you're going to get the high quality work and you know they're going to deliver.
Yeah,
versus
great stuff.
Yeah,
great stuff to know for everybody listening and for me too. Just by the
just trying to share from all of my battle scars of doing this for so long. So
yeah, we're gonna switch this interview around. I'm gonna be interviewing you, extract all the information from the battle scars and all that.
Right, we'll go get some drinks and I get some stories. Yeah,
I'm sure.
So like, where can people find you? I'm looking here. You've got the website, Super Fantastic, spelled with a K, Super Fantastic, SuperFantastic. And that's your
.com.
Your Twitter's @SuperFantastic. And your email's info@SuperFantastic.com.
Yeah, that's, I would say my website's probably the best hub. It's got connecting up to my most up-to-date social media. LinkedIn's on there. It'll have my reel and other work. Put a lot of time into it, and I want you to go see my website because I'm proud of it.
No, that makes sense to have that as kind of like the portal, right? Because you can go there and like, okay, I want to go to the Twitter account, or oh, I want to see his LinkedIn profile, or oh, I can click on the reel. So yeah, it's smart to just funnel everything through that website, and then people can go off different paths depending what they want to see of you.
That sounds good. Super Fantastic with a K.
With a K. Awesome. Well, thank you, Mike. This is I think this has been really a fun, interesting, and useful call.
I agree.
Yeah, people looking to get in the industry and just hearing your stories, being an intern and, you know, unpaid intern, leading to all the cool things that you've done. Showing about taking initiative and always be working and trying to like look at other people's work. That speaks a lot to your journey and kind of like how you've been successful.
Yeah. When you're looking at other people's work.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah. It's like, how did they, how did they do that? And I'm like, oh crap, how did they do that?
Right? Yeah. You know, it's just how you frame it. I suck. Don't go down that path is what I'm trying to say.
Because then you're just going to find some way to divert your attention, and then 20 years pass and you're like, I could have been somebody.
Yeah. Well, I hope it helps. Yeah. It's been total fun and enlightening to me as well, just to hear what you have to say about that. So
yeah, no, it's fun getting interviewed. I'm not used to getting interviewed. So that's
cool. Well, this is your podcast. You need to talk sometimes too.
It's fun to answer questions. Try not to get on my soapbox too much.
Well, thanks for having me on. It was a ton of fun.
Thank you. And we'll put some stuff in the show notes with links to your website and things. And reach out you need animation work, let Mike know and get a hold of Fribbles there, because you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, put Fribbles in the message so I know that you listen to you came right from the podcast.
Exactly, but in subject heading. Hey, Fribbles.
Yeah. Need Fribbles. Okay, great. Thanks.
Cool. Well, thanks, and yeah, we'll be in touch.
All right, man.
All right. Nice. Thank you, Mike. You. Yep. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. If you found it interesting or helpful, please leave a 5-star review. I'd really appreciate it. And don't forget to subscribe. I have a lot of great episodes coming out. As always, I want to hear from you, the game development community. So give me a call at 224-484-7733 or reach out on the website, gamedevadvice.com. I want to know your struggles, your questions, and your ideas. Since the podcast is really about you, the fellow game developer, and our game development community. Thanks and take care. Here's an update. In the next episode, I'll be interviewing Patrick Curry, game industry veteran designer, entrepreneur, and CEO of Farbridge, an AR and VR software developer based in Austin, Texas. So subscribe now so you don't miss out.